So this is a subject near and dear to my heart. I've been working with the tomato breeder Jay Scott for about 10 years, and he was maybe not the first, but the first that I know of, who really took seriously flavor quality in his breeding program. So quality aspects for fresh produce include external characteristics such as color, shape, blemishes, and decay, and affect initial decision to purchase. These kind of characteristics aren't so hard for a breeder to grasp in their breeding program. It's the internal characteristics that get a little tricky, such as flavor, texture, even nutrition, phytonutrients, and that kind of thing. Flavor and texture can certainly affect decision for repeat purchase of produce. So what affects flavor quality of fruits and vegetables? First and foremost, you have genetics. Then you can affect your flavor quality, usually adversely, through environmental factors, too early a harvest maturity, improper post-harvest handling and processing. But we're going to talk about genetics today because genetics holds the potential for flavor quality. If you don't have it in the genetics, you cannot improve it through environmental factors, harvest maturity, or post-harvest handling. Usually you're only going to make it worse. So genetics is the most important, and that's what Jay Scott and I thought, and that's why we started our work together. And so breeding for flavor, breeders can select, and the breeders always hate when I say this, for horticultural traits, disease resistance, and yield, to make it simple. They can select for some quality traits pretty easily, such as sugars and acids, because they can do soluble solids analysis or titratable acidity in their labs. A lot of breeders do this. But the thing that's hard to select for is aroma, because it's a complex trait involving multiple pathways like lipid, isoprenoid, carotenoid, and amino acids. And we don't even understand all the pathways for volatiles. It's difficult to evaluate flavor since you need access to sensory panels, some complex instrumental equipment, such as GCMS and stuff, and breeders don't usually have access to this so easily. So what is flavor, first of all, and how do we perceive it? For taste, we get it from sugars, acids, salts, flavonoids. That gives us sweetness, sourness, saltiness, bitterness. It's detected by sensors on the tongue, of which there are many. In fact, there are many sensors on the tongue just for different bitter compounds. For smell, volatiles are detected as aroma or odor molecules by the olfactory bulb in the nose. And some people say it's almost up to 90% of flavor. Now, I've argued with breeders before. They said sugars and acids are everything. Aromas don't matter. But I don't think that's true. And then you taste plus smell will give you flavor together, which is detection of aroma volatiles via the nose and solutes via the tongue. They send signals to the brain, and the brain does a pattern recognition and tells you this is a tomato, a good tomato, a bad tomato, whatever. So smell is important evolutionarily, and this is what I argue with breeders about, how important aroma volatiles are. For animals, including humans, that's how we found our mates, at least originally. Now it's by perfume. Predator, prey. So these are basic survival life events. And along with the help of taste, bad food or poisonous food. So if it smells bad or tastes bad, definitely don't eat it. So how do we evaluate flavor? And this is what's difficult for breeders to do. We do trained panel to determine intensity and quality of flavor attributes. We do consumer panel to determine likability or acceptability. And you need more panelists for that. Minimum of 30. We do difference testing to see if one compound or one sample is different from another. And for instrumental, we do GCMS for volatiles, and there are many ways to extract the volatiles out of plants. They all have their positive and negative aspects, or advantages and disadvantages. We use HPLC if you want to look at individual sugars and acids with a refractometer. You can do acids, titratable acids by titrator, but if you want to look for individual acids, you have to use an HPLC. And then HPLC, where you really need an MS for flavonoids, limonoids, or other secondary metabolites. Flavonoids can make a food astringent, limonoids can make a food bitter. And then it's not a taste, but it's an important mouthfeel component and can affect flavor, is texture. and we can use the texture analyzer for that. And then we take all the sensory information and the chemical information, and we try to relate them statistically using correlations, regressions, logistic regression, multiple regression, or what have you. Because you have a lot of data, especially if you're dealing with volatiles. And, you know, you have one comp on volatiles, or one is up, one is down. You can't make sense out of it by eye. And you have to use statistical techniques. So we do a lot of panel training. This is an example of a train panel. Here we're training on tomato. Now, for a train panel, what you're trying to do is get everyone to agree that a 5% sucrose solution is a 7 on a 15-point scale. And you do the same for volatiles and whatever flavor attributes you want to do. In our lab, this is done by Amplato, and it's really hard to get your panelists to come. Everybody's busy. It's not their research project. And so you have to use the carrot and the stick to get them to come. So we must offer incentives. Instead of a carrot, she's offering candy here. And you always have somebody who doesn't want to come to panel. So then you got to use the stick and punish the uncooperative. In Florida, we have our ways. So we use instruments like the e-nose and the e-tongue. These are where an instrument's trying to mimic a human. For e-nose, we're looking at volatiles. For e-tongue, we're looking at solutes. And what they both have is, this is a box of sensors, and these are, this is the sensors for the e-tongue. And what the sensors do is they interact with either odor molecules or solutes in a solute non-selectively, like your olfactory bulb, for example, binds odors kind of non-selectively. One odor might bind more than one receptor might bind more than one odor molecule, and this gives you statistically a huge selection of data points. So the e-nose and e-tongue sends the data to the computer, like your olfactory bulb would send it to your brain. The computer program does pattern recognition like your brain does, and it can tell you that this sample is similar or different from that sample. Can't tell you why. Doesn't measure anything specifically, but it can tell you they're different. And then we use GCO, and here you see this young lady, where a human is acting as a detector. So you have the aroma volatiles going through the column, and then the column is split, and part goes to a chemical detector, and part goes to the human detector here. And you get a chromatogram like this, where here's the chemical peaks. And when she detects an odor, she mashes a button and tells us that these peaks have odor activity. So for example, you have a peak with no odor activity, a big peak, and you have tiny peaks here with lots of odor activity. So the size of the peak doesn't tell you how important that chemical is to flavor. So breeder partners. Okay, Jay Scott and now Sam Hutton, we've worked with for tomato flavor. 4 years. Craig Chandler and Vance Whitaker at UF, strawberry flavor with Amplato. Ed Stover and Greg McCollum at USDA, we've done citrus breeding and avocado work. And Fred Gemitter at University of Florida, work on tangerines. And Jim Olmsted, not for so much blueberry flavor, but for blueberry texture, because he's trying to continue the breeding of these crisp blueberries. So we have a 7-year tomato study that I'll just give you a few slides from. We did chemical and physical measurements, sensory measurements, then we related chemical to sensory, chemical and physical to sensory. The goal was to increase sugars, of course, can't have enough sugar in tomato, but also to increase fruity floral notes and decrease the green musty notes in tomato. And that's what's prevalent on the market now, except for Tasty Lee. In process, we gained information on drivers of tomato flavor. This work led to the release of Tasty Lee, and led to work on citrus, to work with other breeders. Since we were successful in tomato, we started approaching other breeders as they approached us to work in their programs. So this is sensory ratings. These are 38 lines for up to 7 years. Not every line was done every year, but you can see 8153 here and Florida 47 were here present in almost every trial. So for a Tasty Lee, we had 414 panelists. And for Florida 47, we had 384. We use Florida 47 because it's an industry standard, so we always had it in our trials as a comparison. 8153 eventually was released as Tasty Lee. So we looked at the panels rated sweetness, sourness, and flavor. And as you can see, Tasty Lee here was ranked quite high, or 8153 in flavor. Florida 47, not so high. This is a comparison. Now the parents of Tasty Lee are here, 8059 and 7907. And here are some crosses that we looked at. And you can see at least these rank pretty much with Tasty Lee. Some of the crosses, not so good. But this is the kind of thing we were doing. So we also measured sugars, individual acids, titratable acidity, soluble solids, total sugars, many volatiles. And so when you have all this data to make sense of it, you do multivariate statistics. So this is a principal component analysis plot. It explains 71% of the data. Sorry. If I touch this pad to use the mouse, it switches the slide. So what you can see is, first of all, I'm sorry, it's very light blue and it's not showing up, but a lot of the, we harvested fruit in, March, June, and December, and all the December stuff was in within these circles here, and most of the June stuff, June harvests were in here. And so what that means on component one, which explained at least half the data, you have most of the volatiles, all the sweetness and sugar measurements, and on this lower loading factor for F1 on the other side of the chart, you have almost nothing, and you have a lot of the December harvest there. So there's a definite seasonal difference, so that told us something. And then we did cluster analysis using all the sensory and chemical data. Here's 8153, and here's Florida 47. They're well separated by cluster analysis. Here's the parents of Tasty Lee, clustered very close to Tasty Lee based on their sensory and chemical components. And here's some of the crosses that Jay made with the parents of Tasty Lee, just as an example. And here we have just Florida 47 and Tasty Lee alone. This principal component explained 86% of the data. Again, all the December harvests are over here, and all the Tasty Lee was mostly over here, and the few December harvests that are up here were actually Tasty Lee. So Tasty Lee was much more associated with sweet. You have also flavor and sweetness and sourness here with the December harvest and a lot of the Florida 47. So just to give you an example of some other work really quickly, Ann Plott has been working with a strawberry breeder. For example, you can see festival was a standard that we used in this trial, and it's related with firmness. But there were a couple of strawberry lines, 09127, 0638, that were correlated with strawberry flavor and liking, and 05107 with woody and musty. So this is good information for the strawberry breeders. Also did chemical analysis. We worked with Fred Gemitter on tangerines, just to show you that one of the tangerine lines, the one in orange, it was higher in sweetness. That was interesting information. They did cluster analysis for tangerine lines and found that some are more associated with esters and more others were more associated with terpene volatiles. And we did a consumer study for citrus where in three different cities, mall intercept panelists. And what they found that freshness, flavor, and appearance were ranked highest in all three cities for attributes that would encourage them to buy. And ease of peeling and seed, surprising to us, was ranked quite low. In fact, the lowest. And we thought that would be really important for an attribute. So that was interesting for Fred Gemitter. And with USDA breeder Ed Stover, we were looking at lines. The green is the early harvest. The red is the later harvest. Amber Sweet and Hamlin are commercial varieties. And we were trying to see how some of these lines that are crosses with tangerine in their background come to a sweet orange. One of them is Pancyrus that has a resistance, not resistance, tolerance to HLB. And finally, with the blueberry breeder, Jim Olmsted, we're looking at more texture attributes, bursting energy, because these crisp blueberries kind of crunch like a grape in your mouth, skin toughness, firmness, juiciness, and then we measure the firmness of the blueberries. And so in conclusion, we work with breeders to improve flavor and texture of breeding lines. This resulted in releases for tomato, not only tomato, but also strawberry. Work with breeders to see how close some citrus hybrids can come to sweet orange in flavor. And in doing this work, we also gained knowledge about drivers of flavor and, for a commodity, drivers for consumer acceptance. And that's it. Thank you.
We have time for one question.
How specifically does J. Scott in the title work integrate your information about aroma and flavor characteristics in the selection?
Well, what we would do is we would, usually December and June, sometimes in March, he would harvest tomatoes ripe in the field. We would bring them in, and within that morning or the day before, and then we would cut them up, and we put plates out, and we'd have people come sample, and then we would take subsets and do prepare them for chemical analysis, and we exchanged those plates about four times during the panel. So we had four sets of plates that represented about eight fruit each, and we would take a subset four times for chemical analysis. And that's basically how we did it. And then we just started looking at the data, and based on that, he made his selections for the next year. I may be oversimplifying it, but that was my understanding.
Thank you, Liz.
Okay.